Hello. Oh. Hi, everyone. You have tuned in to the Radically Loved podcast.
We're not doing ASMR. Sorry if I scared you. That's the dog. She's growling. I'm not sure why. I hope that we're catching you during a time when you need some respite, friends. It's Tessa and Rosie. Hi. I said it's Tessa. Like I'm Tessa.
Rosie's like, Tessa, say something.
I know.
I'm like,
No. We're here. You're listening to a recast of the Radically Loved podcast while we are currently under construction and we have some fun things in the works. I know I keep saying that every week, but I promise you, you will not regret it. Please stay tuned. And look, if you're here, write us a little review or let us know what kind of topics you want us to cover in the coming new year. It's going to be better, newer, faster, stronger, all of the things. What do you think?
I'm super excited because these are not to be, what's the word for that? Like obsequious about it? I don't know what the word is. But I mean, these are all things that you and I are so passionate about. And we've talked about them on Radically Loved before, but I'm super excited to geek out and get really into the weeds of things.
Yes. We're getting super niche. Mm-hmm. Super niche.
It's time.
It's time. And here's the best part. Tess and I are going to be together real life. We have a new studio. We have a new setup. It's all everything new, and we're excited.
So stay tuned. We'll see you in 2025.
Stay tuned, and I might do some ASMR for you.
Yes. Bye. Well, enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show. Hello, friends. I'm Rosie Acosta, your host and guide on this journey to self-discovery and radical love. I've walked a path filled with challenges. Growing up in East LA during the 92 LA riots, it left me searching for meaning, for mentors, for a way to truly understand the purpose of life. But you know what I found? The power of conversation. As a first-gen Mexican American, these conversations became my compass, offering insight, support, and an endless amount of inspiration. So I decided to create a space where we can share these conversations with you, our community. And that's how the Radically Loved podcast was born. Join me as we dive into topics like mindfulness, spirituality, self-love, and the keys to overall healthy living. I'm joined by my dear friend, fellow author, producer, and teacher, Tessa Tovar.
Hi, I'm Tessa, and I'm grateful to be part of this community because it teaches me so much about what it means to be human. Ever since I was a little one, I was always asking my dad the deeper questions in life. Why are we here? What happens when we are gone? What is the purpose of life? I love this show because I get to ask the questions that cut right to the meaning of life. I've learned that no matter how much we want the path to be clear or straightforward, it rarely is. And that is actually part of the beauty that creates a radically loved life.
Please do us a favor, share the episodes you love with your friends, and leave us a review. Together, we'll learn how to create a life that's truly, deeply, radically loved. Let's begin.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Radically Loved podcast. We have two very amazing women giggling and smiling at me. So excited to have Rosie, of course, my co-host, my amazing, I don't know, everything, my mentor, my teacher.
I want that tattooed across.
My amazing everything.
Chest.
Across my chest and my forehead. And joining us today is Robin Hopkins. So excited to have Robin here. Rosie's just been singing your praises since she started working at Headspace, Robin.
I love Rosie so much. Like, I love Rosie so much. I just, like, all I do is try to make Rosie laugh when we record together.
Oh my God.
And, like, and when she does that thing where she brings her hand up and she's like, and I'm like, I win.
Isn't that the cutest?
I'm like, no, you. So Robin, I was just, we're talking about it before we started recording, but you are, I want to call you like actor, producer, writer, mom, wife, extraordinaire, like all of the things, right? You are just so multifaceted. And we've not actually had a chance to like go into how you even started on this path. Like, you're such a creative person. You're hilarious.
Oh my God, and stop.
And I feel like most of the time when we chat, we're, you know, on Dear Headspace. And so there's, you know, a different structure to that show. And hopefully those of you listening here are also listeners of Dear Headspace, which is a really great show. And from what I understand, Robin, this was your, this format was your idea. Is that
well,
right?
Well, it was Baron, I believe, was the person who had the idea, but me and two other dudes sat around and figured out the format and the, it was like Ash and Scott, and we called ourselves Team
Scat. All right, Team Arse.
Team Arse. And we developed it, you know, just, we sat for like, God, for like 3-4 hours just talking about who's our avatar, who are we talking to? And we created this girl named Julie. She has a yoga mat. She was in her mid-20s, middle management. Like, we had a whole thing of like, she's just came from the Starbucks. She's on her way to work. Like, we were like in depth about who we wanted. And we were so like, we just were so passionate about that show. And it's never work, that show. It's never work. And even if I'm in a crusty mood coming into it, like the community and the questions of the way they trust us with like such personal stories about their life, like I always leave like, everything's okay. Like, it's just, it's such a wonderful show.
Yeah. And tell me the difference between that and Well Adjusting, which is an incredible show as well.
Well, I think if you were to look at it like a mullet, right? Like business in the front, party in the back. Dear Headspace is the front.
I love mullets.
I know. Well, I was a proud mullet wearer.
Yeah.
Not proud. Good. I didn't know any better. I was from upstate New York. I was doing the best I could. I had the
They're making
mullet.
A comeback, though.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if they should, but they are.
They are.
And then, so Well Adjusting is the back permed area. Because Well Adjusting, like we always say, it's like we're less of like, producer Steph and I are like, we're experts through our life experience, and a person comes in each week, just one person, and we sit and we kind of pick apart a particular problem that they're having. But I'm really big on talking about it from a point of view of, we're not NPR. Like, it's like, we're sitting around at a bar, we're having cocktails, and I'm getting into your shit. Like, I'm on my third margarita and I just said to you, so tell me about your mother. It's like that vibe. It's fun. It's like, and we're really holding ourselves accountable too, and being like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that either. I, you know, it's like, and so it's just a different perspective. It's like, you have all this expertness over on Dear Headspace, and we're just kind of like, we're your pal and we're in it with you. And we want to help you see something that, I mean, Rosie, you and I have talked about this at length. Like, when you're in the middle of a problem, your own problem, you're just usually warring within yourself. Like, yeah. I could be like, well, what about this? And then there's this. And it's all happening so fast in my head, faster even than I'm talking right now. And sometimes you need another person to just be like, slow down. You just said an insane thing 4 sentences ago. Let's talk about that a little bit. Like, where did that come from? Why do you say that about yourself? You know, what do you want to come out of this? Have you thought about this? So that's like the vibe of Well Adjusting. And it's, I can bring a little more of like the looser Robin over there.
Yeah.
I have to be a little more buttoned up on the headspace.
Yeah. Isn't that so interesting? I have to agree, you know, with that same thing. I have the same experience when I'm doing Radio Headspace. Is a different format. It's more of a storytelling format, which I really enjoy. And there's a writing process. Episodes are written in the context of, you know, something that's going on in my life or some experience I've had. And Dear Headspace, yeah, you're right. It's coming from a more sort of expert level, landscape. Exactly. Yeah.
But also, people are giving us such personal stories about their lives that the reverence that I have over here or right now, I can't, that's not the time, Robin. Like, you know, there's like, I feel like that was my entire childhood, is people saying to me, it's not the time, Robin. And I think I have a sense now, generally speaking. And if not, we have an editor to cut me out when I'm in the, it's not the time, Robin.
Editors are so lovely. Thank you, editors, for all the good work you do. I do want to hear your origin story, Robin. Rosie started to ask you, and I think that I always find it so interesting, people that choose the career of the theater and television and media, because on the outside, you know, it seems like you're always on, and I don't know how much of a personal life you get if you want to go out to a coffee shop, if you get recognized. It doesn't seem like it's for the faint of heart, in even, you know, in the realm of entrepreneurship. So I'd love to hear your origin story.
You know, thank God I'm not that successful. I can go to any coffee shop I want to. So there's that. No, I mean, it's like, look, this has always, always, always been what I wanted to do. Like when I was in like the fifth grade, I'm talking tiny upstate New York town, like tipping cows, the whole bag. I was begging my mom to go to Syracuse, New York, because I thought that's where the commercials were made. Like I was I'm going to get on these commercials. Like, no, I'm talking about local tire commercials. Oh, like, I don't know what I thought. My mom was like, okay. But you know, and then when I went to college, like I just didn't have the nerve to go for acting. Like I didn't have the confidence. Like I had like high school was like not a great time for me as it was for most people. And I just hadn't grown into my own confidence yet. And so with acting, you just get in your own way. If you don't, you have to be willing to look stupid, and you have to be willing to make choices, big, bold choices. Like I always say, if you go out for Halloween and you just like do it up, that's awesome. If you do nothing, like every once in a while, I'll put in some like vampire teeth and I'll just be like, or I'll just go out with my kids and I'll go, I'm a badly dressed lesbian. Like it's like those are great. But if you go in the middle of the road, nobody gets it. Like the real people don't. And it's the same thing with acting. Like you have to just jump into every moment. You've got to be there. And I was just really not there for a lot of years. Like I was too scared. I was too worried about what people thought about me. And so in the weirdest twists of how things work in Robin's brain, I was like, well, I'll go into stand up. Like, because it was like, so like, what is 20 something Robin thinking? But it's like, I love to make people laugh, but I didn't have to be vulnerable in the same way. Like stuff is written and you get up and you either kill, or you fail. It's like, just really, that's kind of it. Like, and you fail and then you just go back up the next night. And it wasn't until after doing stand up for like maybe a couple of years that I was like, I was always like doing this because I wanted to get an acting career, get a sitcom, get something. At one point I had gotten into this comedy festival and I had like a meeting with Disney, and it was during the time when they were like giving out holding deals. Like they would give you like $100,000 and they would try to develop something around you, but they were just kind of giving you money to say, we have our eye on you, we might build something with you. And they called me in and they were like, should we put her on tape right now? And they were talking about me like I wasn't there. And at the same time, it was at a lesbian club that I had been performing at. I was not out. And I was like, and they were kind of, you know, late 90s trying to ask me without asking. And I was like, oh, no, I was just at the club. You know, I was just like, that's where you get stage time, where you get stage time. Meanwhile, I'm like, I have a girlfriend at home. And I was like, blah, 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 like lying up my butt. Cause I was like, I can't in my career. I won't be able to deal with that. So they were like, should we put her on tape? And I was like, God, if they go to put me on tape, I'm not ready. And they didn't. And then nothing came of the meeting. So clearly I was not fun enough. But thanks, Disney. Thanks a lot. But the point was, it was a turning point for me of like, I have to be willing to be vulnerable, and I got to do this. And I quit stand up and started a 2-year conservatory for acting. And then I've just been like kind of hustling ever since.
What was it about that? I'm going to be Dan Kroll right now.
Oh, I love it. I'm holding for sirens.
Holding for sirens.
Sorry. I can never tell which ones you can hear. There are so many. I think we're clear.
Okay,
we're
good.
Clear. Sorry.
I'm curious, like in that process of, you know, going from stand up to fully committing to acting, like was there some inciting moment, you know, where you go from like getting the nerve, right? Like, oh, I'm just going to do it, right? Like, was there something that happened that just propelled you to go into it? Or you just were like, I'm done with this, I'm moving on to the next thing because of the Disney thing?
I think I was just, it was happening over time. Like I was just looking around and I was seeing where this is going to go. Like the next step is you're doing like you have a manager and you're doing road shows and you're doing, and it's just like, I just, it's like, you know, when you see something, like a glimpse of something and you're like, oh, that's like, that sweater doesn't fit me. Like, that's just, it was like, I was seeing a thing that didn't feel right for me. And I knew in my heart what I really wanted to do. And I knew I was scared. Like, I'm not sure I was quite able to articulate it. But I was like, I'm going to just go for this. And then I started researching. I'm going to hold for, God damn it, with the fucking sirens.
It's fine. We're not as stringent as, okay. We're it's fine. We can have background. Okay.
It's picking up pace.
It's a fun sound. It's different than the last one.
Is it
one.
Though? Is it? Okay. It's
I mean, I'm sure it gets old.
Yeah, real fast. So it wasn't just like one moment. It was just that like over time, it just became, it kept getting clearer and clearer.
I'm curious, Robin, too, because you said when you were trying comedy, it was either success or failure. And if you failed, you got back up the next day and just tried again.
Yeah.
How did you overcome the failure? I mean, I think so many people just would
sheer
give up,
stupidity,
right?
Just sheer stupidity. Like, you just had to just keep going. It was like, I wanted to succeed and I wanted to be good. And I'll tell you what, in honesty, there's a real high. Like, when you kill it, like, and like one of the best sets I ever had was right after I quit. I had like Caroline's booked and I was like, I don't even give a shit. I just went up and like, I'm telling you, like people were coming up to me at the bar after and just being like, oh my God. And it was like, cause I didn't have anything at stake. I just went for it. I didn't get in my own way. And you know, but that like those moments are enough to make you be like, maybe I'll get back into it. Even when you're like, no, I don't want to. It's just, it's like a thing. It's the thing that makes you want to perform in general, even if like writing anything, you're doing it for, like, I'm always trying to work something out, but then on top of that, I want to see what it does. Mm. Like, I want to see if someone goes on a journey with me, if it's the journey I thought they'd go on, if it's the, you know, like I write mostly weekly stories for Substack, and sometimes they'll be personal, sometimes they'll be personal growth, and sometimes I'm just trying to be more funny. And it's the ones that I think I'm like were throwaway, like people be like, this was so impactful, and then other ones that I thought this is gonna move people, they're like, meh. So it's like I'm always really interested in the human condition and what people pick up on and what people are drawn to. So there's like a whole, you know. It's like a little bit of a, not to make it highbrow, but it feels like there's a little bit of a psychology around it of just like what I'm drawn to about it.
Yeah. I'm curious, Robin, with what you said, just going back to what you said about performing and having that high. I wonder how much of that is directly related, if maybe directly related to you sharing such personal, because it's like comedians share the truth, right? That's part of the process in order to connect with the audience. I'm like, you're able to share stories and make them, you know, deliver them in a way that I can relate to and I can find the humor in it, right? So it is an art, I think, being a comedian. It's absolutely an art. But I wonder how much of that high that you're talking about and that feeling of being on stage has more to do with your ability of feeling seen, especially when people are coming up to you and saying that really resonated with me.
That's interesting. I mean, yeah, very well, maybe. I mean, it's like, it's definitely a part of it, I would say. I think it's like, it raises the stakes. Mm. You know, like I did a one woman show and I was like, as I was writing it, you know, because I alluded to this earlier that I wasn't comfortable coming out in my work. I wrote a show and it was all about, I kept saying, I don't want to write a big gay show. And my friend Carolyn, who was helping me with it, she just kept being like, just write your ideas down. And then I was like, as I wrote it, I was like, this feels like a big gay show. She's like, we don't have to do it in New York. We can do it out of town. Like, and she just kept like baby stepping me forward. And it wasn't until I was like standing in the venue in San Francisco, like rehearsing like tech. And I was like, what have I done? I was like, this is so personal. I think sometimes like I'm working stuff out as I'm writing it. I'm just like, oh, that's really interesting. I love that. And it's not until I hit publish that I'm like, oh, I just said that out loud. Like, cause you could, with writing in particular, you can hide behind.
Yeah.
And then like once you've like with a joke or with something, like once you've done it once or twice, then you're about the joke or trying to perfect it. And in a lot of ways it neutralizes the emotion of the thing you said, because it just becomes like, I say that all the time. And I think that's really wonderful, actually. It's like, that's how I became like, you know, obviously I've referred several times to like internalized shame, like home, you know, like internalized homophobia. Like I struggled a lot with that. And every level as I've gone along, the saying of it helps me get comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. So like even like having kids, like I wrote an essay about this. It was in Huffington Post about my daughter when she was like four, was going up to men on the streets and going, "That's my daddy." And we were like, oh my God. We were like, first of all, that one guy looked seriously homeless. We were like, just back away from him. And we were like, this just came a lot sooner than we thought. And we bought this book and we put it into rotation and we had to like each night we would just say a little bit. And then as she got older, we just kept adding to the story. But what I found that was very surprising was that it allowed me to get comfortable with it and it allowed me to clear out any shame that I might have had. So I do think that what, you know, like what you're saying is has validity, that there is something about saying the things out loud. It's like we're often just working something out and then put like then there's a what makes it creative, I guess, if I would even say that, is the spin that you put on it. The like askance view of it, you know, just like this is how it is normally, but can I make it funnier? Can I make it deeper? Can I make it bigger? Like the playing with that I find really interesting.
Do you know if you're getting enough magnesium? Because 4 out of 5 Americans aren't. And that's a big problem because magnesium is involved in more than 300 biochemical reactions in your body. Today, I want to talk to you about the most common signs to look for that could indicate you're magnesium deficient. Listen carefully to the end because there's a special offer happening and this could be exactly what you need. Okay, here we go. Are you irritable or anxious? Do you struggle with insomnia? Do you experience muscle cramps or twitches? Do you have high blood pressure? Are you sometimes constipated? There are dozens of symptoms of magnesium deficiency, so these are just a few of the most common ones. Now, here's what most people don't know. Taking just any magnesium supplement won't solve your problem because most supplements use the cheapest kinds that your body can't use or absorb. That's why I exclusively recommend Magnesium Breakthrough. It's the only full-spectrum magnesium supplement with 7 unique forms of magnesium that your body can actually use and absorb. All Bioptimizer supplements are best in class. If for some reason you feel differently, you can get a full refund, no questions asked. They are so confident that they offer 365-day money-back guarantee. Just go to www.bioptimizers.com/radically loved. Use the promo code radically loved10. You can get gifts with your purchase. You can get 2 travel size bottles of Magnesium Breakthrough. Act fast. This is a limited time offer. Go to bioptimizers.com/radically loved and use the promo code radically loved10.
It sounds like when you're approaching your work, you have this ability to put on an experimental hat and let yourself either succeed or fail without attaching so much to the outcome and just continue to fine tune and iterate. I mean, am I getting that right?
No, I'm laughing because this is like a polished version of it, right? Like we made this family during COVID. We made this family video. We used to do this family card, like a greeting card at Christmas, like a digital one. And my wife's a designer and we were like really tried to be like, if it was we had this one that was like Holiday Maximus and it was all in like Harry Potter because it was like Harry Potter was the movie of the year. And we were all love in that. Like Mary had Photoshopped us all in. And this year we were like, it should be video. Like it's COVID, it's Zoom. So we did this whole thing about the Hoptel Corporation and everybody was like, kept like Mary has this alternate personality and she kept like muting. She was always muted. And my son was like just kept changing backgrounds. And my daughter was putting makeup on. She was supposed to be like the marketing intern. And it was like scripted. And like, and Mary and I were like, there's nothing we've ever done that was funnier. Nothing. And when people were like, thanks, we were like, what in the actual with this? We were like, this is brilliant. It is funny. It is on time. And like, it was like, and we still 3 years later talk about how that did not blow up. So I think you're giving more and more credit than I deserve. But that's what's interesting about it is to play with it and see what lands like, and to just like like there's so much instinct. Like in the shower, I'll have an idea, be like, oh, that stupid trend. I'm going to do my take of it. And I'm going to go to the right over here. Like I just had one that came to me in the shower the other day and I was like, that's going to be so fun. And sometimes I don't even care. Like the beauty of the internet is I put it up and then whatever happens, happens. Like I have ones that I've put up that I'm like, that's hilarious. And like it got 4 views. And then I had one that I was like, it's mediocre and got like 25,000. So I'm just like, you know, like I think if I want to make myself laugh and I want to feel like when I'm done editing or writing, reading that last draft or watching something back and go, I feel good about that. Mm-hmm. And it's taken me years to get to that point. It's taken a lot of growth. Like I was way harder on myself earlier.
Yeah.
I think that that's such a common theme with creatives, right? Where we put our effort into something and we have the sort of the gall to put things together and create, and we're excited and we don't question it, right? So that's the thing about creativity, or when I'm inspired, I don't question it. There's no question. Like this is, you know, what I'm going to do and I don't care. But then there's a little bit, a seam of attachment, right? When it doesn't succeed, because then it's like, oh, my creativity's not good. That means I'm not good. That means I suck, right? So I'm curious for you, like, if that happens to you, and when it does, if it does, how do you continue to just like move forward? How do you continue to just be, you know, just say, okay, I don't care that this got 4 views, even though I'm like, really, I think that this is more hilarious than that.
Yeah.
Right?
It's, I'm not going to lie. It's really difficult. I mean, it's a business where I'm just constantly told no. And the way that I'm told no is without ever responding to me again. I get ghosted 5 times a week. So it's like, I do probably 2-3 commercial auditions a week. I'll take meetings. I'll write something, whatever. But like the auditions in particular, like my commercial agent sends me out a lot. And that has really helped me. But like every once in a while, it'll turn around and I'll just I'll be up for something big. Like I was just up for that. And just like that, the Sex and the City thing for a very, very small part. And I just really wanted it. And then they just didn't call me. And I was like, God damn it. And it's like, and then a cascade of all the no's can fall out of your mouth. Like, why is it always me? And like, when is it my turn? And I know it was, you know, what, like, and then it's just a hop, skip and a jump to, maybe I don't have it. Maybe I don't have that thing. Maybe I'll never bubble up. Maybe I don't, you know, it's like, and so I am constantly fighting that back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I'm constantly trying to remain positive and hopeful and just keep going. And it takes a lot of work.
What would you say you lean on to help you keep going, if anything?
Well, I have to do a lot of, like, I've had people say to me, like, look at where you were at this time last year. You'd kill for what you have this year. So I have to do a lot of like check-ins about like where, you know, what I've done. I talk a ton about on Well Adjusting about the Great Robin plan that I started creating when I was separating from a business venture. And I was like, what do I want? And I part of the thing was, for me, I realized I had stayed in this situation longer than I wanted to because of fear. And so I was like, I don't want that to be the case anymore. So like, I want to live into what I'm building versus, that's all something that someone gave me. Someone just gave that to me and I'm lucky that they gave it to me and I wasn't trying to get it. So I'm like, so I started this plan of like, well, where would I like to be a year from now? Where would I like to be 5 years from now? And I think I'm on year 3 of the Great Robin plan. And then like, as I build it back up at the top of January and I go, all right. And if I can, I go in like quarterly or probably twice a year and then try to maybe rejigger things. But like this January, looking back at the last 2 years at what I had accomplished since, you know, going out on my own, like was really helpful for me. Like, look at all that you did when you were scared. Look at all that you did. Look at what you accomplished. And you got more than you thought here. You got less here, but you pivoted here. So those kinds of things are very helpful. And then I have supportive people around me. That's really important. Because, you know, the further up you go in the business, the less truthful people are. No one's, you know, if you're hot, they love you. If, you know, if they, you can't make them any money, they just don't answer you. So it's, it, you have to have like really good people around you who, like, in the moments when I'm tearful and being like, it's so hard, like they'll talk to me on my morning walk. Like, I have this posse of like three women that are like my best friends from college. And like one of them is an early morning walker with me, and we'll have like hour long conversations as I'm walking through the Prospect Park. And, you know, and it's just whoever's turn it is who needs a, you know, a little like air.
I love that. I think that's so important to be able to have like a community of support, especially if you do have a career that you're, because it's so against our nature to get rejected all the time, right?
It really is. Like,
so I think that even though, you know, I hear people all the time, you know, when they've got, you know, their book proposals rejected or a show or, you know, some idea, you know, that, I mean, it doesn't matter how often you get rejected. I think it's just really hard to get used to. It doesn't matter how often you hear it, you know? And I think that what it does is it absolutely does build resilience. So I think the resilience is good, but I think it doesn't make it easier, right? So I think that what you're saying is so key, this idea of creating a support system that can hold you during this process, because I think a lot of the times people forget that, because we, you know, even post 2020, there's been so all these studies that are showing how people are still isolating. And you know, there's been a lot of studies that have shown that people in isolation live shorter lives than people who live in communities tend to live longer lives. So I think that that's, it's something so important, and it's good that you do that. I'm curious how, you know, like being a mom and having kids impacts your creativity.
What really gets in my way, Rosie? Just kidding. I love you guys. You're not listening, but I do love you. You know, when they were littler, it was hard because it was like I've heard people say like, you know, little people, little problems, big people, big problems. And it's like, but you're just really exhausted. The physical exhaustion is real. So when they were little, it was definitely, I couldn't do what I'm doing right now. Not like I couldn't travel. Like if you travel, you're leaving your partner with the, you know, a baby, and you're leaving them alone, and that's a lot. So it was like I could do less, but I was doing some. And then like as they get older, I can dream bigger because I have more time and space. Like my daughter's been in her room since I don't know, early the fall. I think I have not seen her since the fall. She just goes in her room with an iPad. I'm like, has anyone seen Maxine? Does she live here any longer? But you know, but they're also like, but so there's more time, there's more space. Maybe I'll see her after college. But like in terms of like the ideas, like it shifts my comedy in some ways. It opens up another, like, I'd certainly want to talk about, in the same way that like you and I talk all the time about menopause now, like when you get into whatever phase of life, things are funny and interesting around that. Like Leanne Morgan, this comic, is talking all about menopause, and I love her for that. And she's hilarious. And she talks about being a mom and, you know, a stay at home. She's not really a stay at home mom because she's got a whole career, but, you know, but like, so I do think it impacts it in that way, in that you find different things funny. You know, look at Amy Schumer, since she had a kid, she now talks about mom stuff. And, you know, you talk about what's going on for you in whatever medium you're in.
Do you believe that people can become funny, or you think people are just born funny? Like people that have humor, you know what I mean? I'm just curious from a comedian perspective.
I mean, this is a Robin Hopkins perspective. I think you're born funny or you're not. Like, I like jokes. I know that's why I feel bad saying it. Like, you, like, but jokes are like, it feels like someone is going like this, you gotta say this right now. Like, if someone's tapping me. And then there'll be like another shoulder that's going, this one's probably gonna go too far. Don't say that one. Like, it's like, I have just like instincts of like it just happens so fast. I can't even stop myself sometimes, but, or sometimes like I'll be four jokes and I'll be like, you can only say that one is the only appropriate one. But I didn't sit in that moment and think to myself, like, what would be a funny thing to say? the funniest thing, and this is a perfect example, like take it off me, right? So I produced Amy Schumer's podcast for Spotify, and she is a delight and she is hilarious. And I'm such a fan. And we were doing, I don't know, like some marketing materials or something. And she came in and I was working with Baron, who's a former producer at Headspace. And he was like PAing the shoot for me. And he walked over and he said, "Hi, I'm Baron." And she said, "So am I." And I was just like, I was like, that is so fast and so funny. And no one else needed to hear it but him. And it just came to her like that. And that's like, you're either born with that or you're not. Like,
and also seems like there's a quick, like you have to be quick with it. It's quick-witted. And
you have to step out on a ledge every time. Cause like sometimes you're going to say it and ain't nobody going to laugh. And you're going to be like, oh shit, that one was too far.
Okay. So Robin, what do you do when somebody thinks they're funny and they're not?
I mean, you're a writer. How many people have like read your stuff and then said to you, "God, I really feel like I've got a book in me." Like you just, I mean, it's like, I'm not trying to hurt anybody. You just, yeah, that's great. You should jump right in, work on, there's workshops. Like, it's like, I was just, you know, if, you know, there's those people who are, I don't know how to say it nicer, kinder.
you don't have to, I mean, like, this is a safe space, you know, and people that are listening,
here's the thing. I love you all.
I'll try and open the door a little bit more.
Please,
right?
Help so, me. Help me. I'm drowning.
So, there are workshops. I do believe
there
that
are workshops.
There's a workshop there. I do. You know, it's like, so Jen Sincero is the author of You Are a Badass.
Her.
Yeah. She's a dear friend and I consider her a mentor, and we've had this conversation before. And I think that sometimes she believes that everybody, if they have a desire to write a book, there's a book there, right? So that perspective of like, yeah, if you really have the desire for something, you can create it. My writing coach, Jeannie Faulkner, has said to me before, you know, sometimes you have to explore an idea where you might think, yeah, this is a really great book, but maybe it's just a really great article, or maybe it's just a really great blog, or maybe it's a podcast episode, you know? So I think that the person themselves has to sort of discover what that is, because the last thing that you want to encounter is not having enough to say, right?
Yeah.
Like I had too much to say when I was writing my book. Like I could have written a second book, you know? And so
You're going to.
And that felt very, and it felt very complete to me. So, you know, there are people that I have come to me now. This is my caveat, right? This is where I'm opening the door. So I was at a workshop once and I had somebody come up to me and tell me this idea they had for a book. And she told me the content and my reaction was a bit telling. Like I kind of was like, ugh. Because it wasn't because I didn't think it was a good idea. I felt like, you know, she was going to be writing about a really heavy topic. That was very close to her. And I said, look, this is great if that's what you want to do. But the issue that I see is, do you want to spend the next year of your life talking about this over and over and over and over again, right? So I think it's really important for you to just do a little bit more inquiry and just be really sure that that's what you want to do, right?
I think that's a great response. And I also think like, I think there's like a real nuance in this question, if I'm being serious, right?
Yeah.
Like my acting teacher used to say, if you are a 7 in terms of talent, I will bring you to a 7. And if you are a 10, I will help get you to be a 10. But then by contrast, I think of the Artist Way book, which, you know, how much did I talk about the Artist Way in year one of Dear Headspace? I like can't not talk about it. But she's just like, everyone has an artist within them. But I do think that like, if you meld those two things together, they're at different levels. Like some people can paint. And they can paint some and they could do some things, whatever. And then some people are brilliant, inspired people who create masterpieces. And I am in no way, shape, or form calling myself that. But I'm saying that, like, I know, like, you can say a lot of things that I'd be like, I don't know, maybe I'm not good enough. But like, you can't say I'm not funny. Like, I would always be like, okay, now you're just being stupid. Like, that's one of the only areas in my life that I just feel innately confident with. And yeah. The rest of them, I'd be like, you're probably right. I'm never going to make it. And I'm going to retire. You know, so it's like, I think like whatever my level is, I'm just striving to get to it. And if someone were to come up to me, I'd be like, well, what is your level? Like, if it's not a funny person, then maybe it's just like, I don't know, would it be just fun for you to do like improv groups? Like it's just like that person whose play you go to see that stinks and you say something that's like, I probably rehearsed that a lot, you know, because it's like, I never want to lie. I don't want to say anything and you don't want to encourage someone down a path but anybody who says that offhandedly, in my experience, isn't a person who's going to pursue this.
Right.
It has to be the only thing that you want to do. Like, I could have had 27 different careers at this point. Like, I would have been an EVP. I worked for 20 years in media, and I sat as an executive assistant because I kept saying, I do not want to be promoted. Because I knew it would distract from the career I wanted. I sat next to my boss who ran VH1 and I saw every head of every single of every department. And I'd be like, I guess I could do that if I had to. I guess I'd do marketing, like, because it's creative adjacent. And it's either, I have no choice. This is where my heart is. This is what I want to do. And anybody who walks up to you and goes, I think I'm kind of funny and I could probably do it. Well, then I'd say, then train and see if you still love it. Because the business sucks and it will kill you. So it's like, you know, if a person, like, I don't think a person who's saying that offhandedly really, they don't mean it in the way that I'm doing 7 sets a week when I'm 25.
Right.
I don't do that anymore, just to be clear. But you know what I mean? Like, that's like that level of going after it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you've been doing this for a while. I'm sure you've seen massive amounts of change and disruption in the entertainment industry. I'm curious where you see it headed.
I don't know. I have to be really honest. I mean, I think one of the YouTube and the phone are the biggest disruptors. Mm-hmm. Like, you can, I could make a platform, I could make a piece of content and I could hand it to you. Like, when I came out of acting school, my acting teacher, she was a very dramatic, tiny little woman and she was so brilliant. But she would be like, actors are the dregs of the arts community. Like, no one ever says if they're a saxophone player, no one ever says, no one will hire me. They play for the love of playing. And like, she was just always beating that into our heads. So I took that really personally. And I was like, okay, she's right. So I came out and I would create these groups where we would get together and practice monologues. I was like, nobody's hiring me right now because my resume is too thin. That's how I became a producer. I went to a theater. I was like, this looks nice. It's got about 60 seats. I was like, how much is it for a week? I put my credit card down. I picked a play. I hired my friends. We put it on. I put it on 5 nights. And almost every time, I made about $40. Like, but I learned, I got a credit on my resume. I had opportunities to reach out to people in the industry to say, I'm performing. Could you care about me? Come on in, come see it. And that's how I started like working. Like, I was just like, I'm going to just go for this. And I have always produced my own work. So the disruption is that now it's so much easier to make your own work. Like, anybody can create a podcast. Anybody, like, that person comes up to me, is like, not funny. I'd be like, well, you know, like, go do an open mic or go do whatever. Like, you have everything you need to create now. It's made surfaceability of your content very difficult because there's like 3 million podcasts right now. And most of them have less than 6 episodes. So, but discoverability of your content is very difficult. And just like anything else, things float to the top that aren't great.
Yeah.
And that is one of the hardest things to watch, is to like make something that you feel, that you thought about, that you brought people in and you paid people and you know, I did this like digital short series called Stupid Michelle and Dumb Robin. And we made these short videos. And I was so proud of each and every one of those videos. And I couldn't get them to surface because they weren't 30-second daily videos. But I didn't have that kind of money or time but they didn't surface in the same way. But I will always have them. I will have always made them. And no one can take that away from me. So it's like, where is it all going? I don't know. Like, you see the media companies coming back and trying to take control. And they are, to a certain extent. You know, it's just, you know, the same power players just move companies. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. It's interesting. I have concerns about AI. I have concerns about, you know, like I love it and I'm embracing it in my work, but I also like the small roles that I play, you know, the woman screaming about a vegan sandwich in that show could maybe in the future, not even that distant future, be played by AI.
Yeah.
So it's, you know,
it's interesting, right?
Wild. It is as well. But just like, I just had Judy Gold on my podcast While Adjusting, and I love her. And she was just like, you just got to keep reinventing yourself. She's like, you just keep going. She's like, you can't stop. And that's just what I'm doing. I mean, my back hurts, but I can't stop. I just gave you the episode title right there.
My back hurts, but I can't stop. I love it. I can't wait for that one. I have a final country question. It could be a country song. Oh my gosh. Amazing. There
my
you
back
go.
Hurts, but I can't stop. I should stop.
Yes, please. No. Don't stop. Don't stop.
You should stop. Just stop singing. Just please stop singing.
Yeah, can you just stop?
Everything else is okay.
Well, Robin, I do have one final question for you. But before I ask that, I want to know where you'd like people to follow you, where you like to connect with listeners most.
Well, just come right to my house. That feels like the easiest way to do it. Like, I'm in Brooklyn. Just yell Robin and I'll be right there. I can't be far. I'm at Real Rob Hops on all the social platforms. That's probably the best way to get me. And of course, you got to watch me and Rosie on Dear, listen to me and Rosie on Dear Headspace. And you got to listen to While Adjusting. If you know, you don't have to. I mean, I'd like you to if you want to. I'm like the worst. I'm the worst promoter ever. I was like, forget it. Don't. You have other things to do. It's okay. Forget I said anything.
Oh my gosh. It's so, Robin, you're the best.
I can listen to you all day.
I know. My face hurts from smiling this whole time. I might have been quiet, but I'm like, my face hurts. Okay. So last question, Robin.
Yes, ma'am.
I would love to hear. I was going to ask you, you know, what advice would you have to those aspiring to follow in your footsteps? And I think you kind of answered that question, but I'm curious then if we spin this to advice you'd give to your childhood self, maybe at 15 years old,
what
advice would you give?
Tessa, do you understand that on my to-do list is to finish my Substack for this week, and it's a letter to young Robin. Like I wrote it yesterday, like my first draft.
What? I love that. The serendipity.
So by the time this comes out, it'll already be out. Get on my Substack.
That's great.
Robin Hopkins.
Yeah, we'll link all of it.
Should I learn in my crappy childhood?
Let's link it to the show notes. So it'll be in the show notes or in the description if you're watching this on YouTube.
I mean, I think like this isn't what I wrote in my thing. So now you got to go to both places. But I think honestly, I think I would tell myself, and again, like, I don't know if it would change anything. This is what I was exploring in this essay is like, is it all just an episode of Sliding Doors? Like, if I tell myself this, do I end up in the same place anyway, like Gwyneth Paltrow, but with just like a cuter haircut? Like, it's like, I would tell myself to be more confident, like that it's okay. And those people that are mean to you, they don't matter. You will find your people. You will find your place. You will find people who love you, and you will find it will all come together. You know, it's like, I think those of us who have like, you know, like, I don't know, I hate to use words like childhood trauma because it feels so like, you know, like ridiculous and self like whoop, whoop. But, you know, maybe people who it just wasn't always so great for. I think, you know, and I think we've talked about this, Rosie, like I remember maybe at points in high school, like just like the dark, like laying in bed and just being like, this is really bad. And I don't know if this is ever going to get better. And then the sun came up. I'm going to start crying. The sun came up the next day and it was always okay. And I would want Tiny Robin to know it's all going to be okay. The sun will come up tomorrow and you just keep going and you don't let anybody stop you. Like that's it.
Oh, that is such a beautiful way to end, Robin. Thank you so much. God,
at least we didn't end on me singing.
You get to work with this fantastic woman. I know.
That's just incredible.
It's my pleasure. I worship Rosie.
We just do this all day long.
And they're like, awesome. And our editor's just like, can you guys stop? We'd like to actually do the script. I'm like, all right, we can.
Sure. Well, I will say thank you, Robin, for your time. Rosie, I love you. Robin, I'm such a fan.
Oh, me too. Those right back you, at you.
Aw, I love it. Well, Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Share it with those who you think it would be helpful for. Listen, watch on YouTube. It's, yeah, we're in all the places.
We're in all the places.
I always say I'm in all the places nobody asked me to be. That's what I'm
Yes.
I'm like, that's the perfect thing to end it on.
Hey, friends. Thank you so much for listening to the Radically Love podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps. Also, don't forget to check out the Mindful Love Hub on Substack. This episode was produced by Tessa Tovar, music by DJ Taz Rashid.